Hello, everyone. It's Casual Jake.
And I'm Taito.
And you are listening to the MTG Educators Network podcast.
Yes, and today we are going to be continuing from our previous episode where we talk about all of the cards that we are so excited for coming from this set called Commander Legends that, when this episode releases, will be out today.
Yeah, boy, it's going to be so much fun. My only regret is it's going to be very hard to draft it.
Yeah, as a non-draft player, I'm glad that I'm not a draft player, but I do really feel for all y'all that really do like to draft.
Yeah, if you listen to one of our previous episodes where we talk about formats, I talked about how draft is one of my favorite formats. I'm in no way a competitive drafter. I just love opening up booster packs, trying to make something work, and this is literally like commander and draft in one. Oh my god, and then it kind of falls apart. But I will be doing something with my team, Elder Dragon Skypelander. It's kind of a, we can't talk about it too much, but we will be drafting. We are being sponsored by a store and we will put it on the internet. So it's going to be really fun to kind of share the draft experience, even if it's a kind of a skewed one, because it'll only be four of us.
Yeah, that'll definitely be cool. So in our previous episode, we talked about the commanders that we think are going to impact the format the most. We also talked a little bit about the actual set. And we talked about the really obvious cards that are that we called them the talk of the town, right? All of the Magic community was talking about these cards. So if you want to check that out, go check out our previous episode. Come on back here. And then we're going to start talking about the other cards that we think are going to be super, super big and popular in the 99 of a lot of commander decks.
For sure, for sure. And this first card that we have here is, I think, another great reprint. I think it's a healthy card for the format. And what card is that going to be, Taito?
So this is the way that we did this for everyone at home, you know, look behind the curtain. Jake and I came up with our own lists and then we kind of combined them and we're going to alternate cards that we picked. So when I speak about a card, it's more than likely going to be a card that I put on my list and Jake will talk about cards that he put on his list. We actually didn't have a lot of overlap, which was really cool. So this is actually the only reprint on my list and it's three visits. And three visits is a green and a generic for a sorcery. Search your library for a forest card. Put that card onto the battlefield and shuffle your library. If you have heard of a card called Nature's Lore, that's what this card is. It just has a different name.
No, it's a great card. I call it the reverse Farseek because I love Farseek, you know, because it gets everything but a forest card. But I mean, you're going to use this most of the time to go get a forest swamp, you know, an overgrown tomb or stuff like that. It's going to help with your... Yeah, the Triomes, you're right. It's going to get you, it's going to help you with your fixing, it's going to ramp you at an affordable cost. Good card. Solid.
Yeah, and the reason that I put this as a card that I thought was going to be so big is the fact that this card, as of right now, you know, before, the day it was spoiled, I think I looked up, it's from Portal 3 Kingdoms. It's the only time it's been printed, and it's a $100 common, I believe.
It's ridiculous. Set.
For a card that, again, you look at Nature's Lore, which it has gone up in price because so many more people are using it because Nature's Lore has gotten a little bit more popular within the last year. But it's so nice to be able to have this because it feels like it is a new card because of how low that price is going to absolutely drop.
Right. Like, I don't own a three visits, but now, you know, what is it, uncommon in this set?
Yeah, it's an uncommon.
Yeah, I'll probably own a few now after this.
Yeah, exactly. So... that was my one reprint, and I actually found out after I compared our lists that you also put a reprint down.
Yeah, I put a few. I like this card, and so this one might be seen. Some of y'all are going to be like, oh yeah, it's just a good card, but some of y'all, like Taito here, have been like, I've never heard of this card, and this is Merkfiend Liege. I love this card. It's a card that it says it's going to give your blue creatures +1/+1. Give your your green creatures +1/+1, and then it's going to untap all of your blue and green creatures on your opponent's untap step. So it's a cool card. I think it's just a card that kind of has gone like, and maybe this is just me. I've never seen it played against me. I've played it in a few decks and I love it. I've never seen it go against me, but I feel like because it's in the pre-con, people are going to pull it. They're going to see it and they're going to be like, oh, this is a cool card, and they're going to play it. I think it's completely fairly costed. It's two and three Simic Hybrid. For a 4/4. So yeah, I think it's a cool card. I'm glad it's going to get a little bit more visibility now that it's been reprinted. I think it's only like $5 currently, but I think totally a worthy pickup.
Yeah, in a lot of decks, this kind of effect that we used to see on a card, obviously it's banned now, is Prophet of Grufix, but Seedborn Muse, Wilderness Reclamation, this untap thing, it's such a strong effect in so many decks that for a lot of them that want this, it's going to be really nice to get their hands on it a little bit easier.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, I think the reason why I chose it was because, again, I hadn't seen it being talked about a lot. So now that it's recently reprinted, it's in the pre-cons, which a lot of people are going to pick up just for the value. People are going to get their eyes on it and say, oh, this is a cool card. I should play this in my other decks. And that's where that'll go.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, the next card is one that I picked out that I definitely picked out for selfish reasons. It is Mnemonic Deluge, right? Mnemonic Deluge. It is a 9-cost sorcery, 6 and blue, blue, blue. There is this cycle that they gave us of mythic sorceries that are 6 and then 3 of the color. And Mnemonic Deluge is the blue one, and I think it's the one that I'm the most excited for. And it says, exile target instant or sorcery card from a graveyard. Copy that card 3 times. You may cast the copies without paying their mana costs. Exile Mnemonic Deluge. And Jake, I think you know exactly what deck made me put this on this list, because it is a deck that you and I both share.
Yeah, it's a Yuriko deck, ain't it?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, not all extra turn cards exile themselves after you play them. And there are some really, it's already, even if I play Dig Through Time 3 times or Treasure Cruise 3 times, that is bonkers, right? Right. So this, or if someone makes me mill and expropriate is in my graveyard, like I'm definitely winning the game then. So
yeah, also just the fact that it has such a high converted mana cost makes it perfect for Yuriko, because if you rip it off the top with the Yuriko activation, that's what 9 damage to everyone. That's great. Yeah, it goes in my Yuriko deck too.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think that this is going to be a good card in a lot of spellcaster decks just as a finisher, right? Even if you copy something like what is it? Jaya's Immolating Inferno. Is that the one that like takes the legendary creature's power or something like that? You do that, or Star of Extinction. Like there's a bunch of different things you can do with this.
I was going to say those. I think the Jaya's, you have to pay X into it.
Oh, I'm thinking of it. Chandra's Ignition. That's the one.
That one.
So
yeah.
You Mnemonic Deluge, your Chandra's Ignition. Like you're just going to win the game, dude. Like it's a really strong card. And I think you'll see it in a lot of blue decks where they can take advantage of it. And honestly, and we're going to talk about another of these a little bit later, but I think all of these cards could definitely see play, all of these mythic sorceries. I just think that Mnemonic Deluge is possibly the best one.
Yeah, actually, because you mentioned it, I'm going to switch this one, going a little off script, and get my my big splashy spell, which is the green one, and that is called Reshape the Earth. This is going to be 6, and then, of course, 3 green, and it says search library for up to 10 land cards. Is that forest? Is that basic? No, that's just 10 lands, and put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. Personally, I love utility lands. I love lands that get you stuff that's not just, you know, mana. And so the opportunity just to go get 10 of those, you know, of course you get Field of the Dead, you know, and then all these other different lands, put them on there, make a bunch of zombies, get a bunch of mana. Like, it's great. And if you are playing that new turtle guy, which I will talk about later, spoiler, they all come in untapped. And then it's like, well, what do you do? It's one of those, like, I pretty much am going to win the game unless you have something to stop me, because that's just an incredible value right there. You're basically, you're spending 9, you're getting 10 land cards. So it's assuming 10 mana, if not more, for your ones to make more than 1 mana. But also you get a lot of utility land because you can choose any land in your deck.
Yeah, this card for me is going to go straight into my Ashaya deck, because this just says increase your Ashaya's power by 10.
Yeah.
Or
a landfall deck.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to, in Ashaya at least, I'm going to get like 9 forests and Nykthos every single time if I don't have Nykthos already out. And that's just going to be amazing. And that's like floor. That's like the floor of what this deck does.
Right.
What this card does.
No, I'm thinking about like my Omnath Locus of the Royal deck where I play this. And okay, I get 9 Omnath activations of where I'm putting 9 counters on probably Omnath and just making him huge, and I'm drawing 9 cards, and you know, so in my Omnath deck, not only am I getting lands, I'm getting counters, and I'm drawing cards. You know, again, it's a finisher. So, and I go get a Rogue's Passage, you know, so I can make him unblockable or something. Yeah, it's a great card. It's a big splashy green spell. Again, this is what we love about Commander, are these big, I'm gonna play this spell and probably win the game. And yeah,
Exactly. And the next card is along that similar vein, except it is a big splashy creature. And we have the Hellkite Courser, right? So this is a 6-cost dragon. It is 6 mana, 4 and 2 red. It's a dragon, as I said. It has flying. It is a 6/5. And what this creature does, and this is pretty sweet, when it enters the battlefield, you may put a commander you own from the command zone onto the battlefield. It gains haste. Return it to the command zone at the beginning of the next end step. So let's think about this for a second.
Say what?
Top commander that comes to mind, absolutely so good with this commander, Kalia, right? Kalia comes out, gets you another creature. Other creatures that you could do this in. If you're playing mono red, Itali or Ilharg, which I know a lot of people are, or mono red New Purphoros, that is basically like the sneak attack thing. This card is so good in those decks because it just brings you get a 6/5 body as well as your commander and their trigger that's going to happen when Itali attacks, when Ilharg attacks. The chains that you can do with this card are so, so good. And I think this card is going to see so much play in so many decks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is a very cool card. Again, very big, very splashy, something that a lot of people are going to start playing with. Personally, red's one of my favorite colors to play in Commander because, again, it is these big, I'm going to do something really impactful and I'm going to bring on the pain, if you will. You know, I'm going to stomp. And this allows you to do that and cheat out that Commander and get some value off of that very, very, I mean, not for free because, of course, you're casting this, but to get your Commander plus an extra body, like, that's sweet.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know. I'm excited to see someone manage to chain this into, you know, something like I said, this into Ilharg, which will then chain into who knows what, and it just
going.
I think it'll be really, really cool. And then our next one, you actually chose a cycle of creatures review and preview here.
Yeah, I did. I want to talk about the familiars. So this was a kind of a cycle of monocolor uncommon partners that I just like them because, like, I like the idea of having, like, a little pet. You know, like, I was always, like, the person, like, when I did play World of Warcraft or something, like, I always wanted a little pet with me. Even if they didn't do damage or anything, like, I just liked having a little guy with me to kind of, you know, accompany me on my journey. And these are what these feel like to me. The first one I'm going to talk about, except they do help your board state. Like, I would recommend casting them. But they're all fairly easy to cast. So, like, there's Kedis, which is, his name's Kedis Emberclaw Familiar. He's 1 generic and 1 red. He's a legendary elemental lizard. And he has, whenever a commander you control deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to each other opponent. And that's going to be a partner commander. So, again, I love it because it doesn't really do anything on its own. I mean, I guess you could swing him with your 1/1 and double. You know what I mean? He's not something that I would play by himself, but I could partner him with, like, oh, what's the guy's name? The guy with the big handlebar mustache.
Bruce Tarl.
Yeah. And smack you with Bruce. And then, like, the little guy's like, okay, now we're going to hit everyone else. And then he, like, just smacks, like, 3 people in a row. You know, to me, it's kind of fun. You know, I also look at Kelleth Sunmare Familiar, which is, again, 1 and a white. It's a 1/1 horse. And it says, whenever a commander you control attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Again, going with this theme of, it's not necessarily good as a commander itself, but it enhances your other commander. It kind of reminds me of the lieutenant mechanic in Commander. You know, now this, of course, is its own thing, can do its own thing, activates itself. But to me, they are more of a support of your existing commander. And I think that's just kind of cool.
So, Jake, are you aware of the tinfoil of these creatures?
No, what's the tinfoil?
The theory behind these creatures.
Oh, gosh, what's the theory?
So the theory, fan theory for some people in the Magic community, is that these are actually a preview for Strixhaven. Because they're familiars, and they're all sort of kind of things that might be like a wizard's familiar. So we have an owl, right? That's a huge wizard thing. A horse, you know, it's kind of a stretch, but we have a cat for a witch, right?
The cat
of Falthus Shadow Cat familiar. We have a lizard, which maybe a little bit of a stretch as well.
I could see like a little newt like running around the lab.
Yeah. And then we have Inara, Wolvid familiar, right? So we... It's plausible, and again, like, it also comes from the art. I think specifically the ones that people really thought about was S.U.R. Wardwing Familiar, which is an owl, which is near and dear to my heart, of course. and Falthus Shadowcat familiar, they both look like they're at a wizard school. You can see the high parapets on Essior, and you can see that Falthus is in a library, and even in her flavor text says she sticks to her chosen master closer than their own shadow, which granted that does talk about like a master, which is a familiar has a master, but the theory is that these are creatures that we are going to maybe get, or at least types of creatures that we will see in Strixhaven.
Yeah, that's cool. I did not know that theory. You've almost kind of proved it to me. I want to believe it. That's really cool. It makes a lot of sense flavor-wise. And even if it doesn't, I don't know. I guess you can have your own headcanon, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Sweet. Well, this next one that we're going to talk about is, so we're going to switch away from kind of the cycle and we're going to go to some more specific cards.
Yeah, we took a little break from mythics and we're going to go right back into it. So the next one is Sphinx of the Second Sun, which is a mythic sphinx. It is 8 mana, 6 and 2 blue, and it is flying. It is a 6/6, and it says, at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, you get an additional beginning phase after this phase. The beginning phase includes the untap, upkeep, and draw step. So this actually confused me a lot when I read it the first time.
It's a big brain card.
Literally. So what happens is your normal turn, you have your untap, upkeep, draw, main phase 1, combat, main phase 2, end phase. That's your normal turn. With Sphinx of the Second Sun out, you have untap, upkeep, draw, main phase 1, combat, untap, upkeep, draw, main phase 2, end phase. So essentially, it is like getting another turn in a lot of ways, but it does also still help because there are some cards that care about upkeeps. There's a lot of things that you can unlock with this card.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. I think, funnily enough, it kind of pairs with Approach of the Second Sun, if you will, because you could play Approach of the Second Sun in your first main phase. And then, you know, you go through your combat, you go to your second main phase. Well, you go to your untap, upkeep, all that stuff. Does it draw as well? Yeah, you draw.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, if you have a way to get Approach to the Second Sun, like draw it some more and get it back into your hand, then you can just recast it again. And I just think that's kind of cool. Maybe that's Christmas land. But I like this idea of like, you know, getting two of something. We've seen this effect before in other stuff where you get like two upkeeps or you get an additional main phase after your combat phase. And I think this is just a really cool way to kind of give that ability to blue.
Yeah, it definitely is. I do think that this card, it will be slightly more narrow than some of the other cards we're talking about. But I do think that it will be a card in which you look at a deck and you go, oh, this is a Sphinx of the Second Sun deck.
Yeah.
It's going to be in this deck. And it's going to be something that you have to keep in mind when a deck could possibly be running this.
I think like now, you said, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm all set.
Oh, sure. All I was going to say was it's definitely going to be one of those cards that if you don't know about it and you play against it, you're going to be like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, it changes the rules of Magic in and of itself. And while that card might be a little bit more narrow, I think this card that you're going to talk to us about is going to be one that could possibly be almost like ubiquitous in all commander decks that have, I don't know, 3 or less colors or 2 or less colors.
Yeah, no, I want to talk about the Diamond Cycle. I love the diamonds. I think they're super cool. I think they're really great reprints. They are your 2 mana, they're your, you know, your 2 mana ramp. But they're very good. They enter the battlefield tapped. And I just think they're good. I mean, they're really cheap and pretty affordable already, but I think just getting them reprinted, getting them kind of back into circulation is a great idea. You know, they're a really, really good budget option. I'm big on budget playing, and I think they're just going to help out a lot of budget decks.
Yeah, I mean, the diamonds are, for anyone that started playing Commander because of, like, precons and stuff, this is stuff that you saw. Like, this is, it's very common, and a lot of people, they ran these cards for a very long time, and they're still solid options because if you are, let me think how I can word this. If you are not using or abusing the fact of untapping and retapping mana rocks, these cards can actually in some ways be better than a mana rock like an Arcane Signet.
Yeah, agreed. I think they're awesome, and they're definitely going to go in my Archelos deck, which I keep talking about. I can't wait to talk about him later. Amulet of Vigor on stuff. I'm excited. But the next card, I think, is one of probably the coolest new white cards that we're seeing from this set. I mean, we talked about how Wizards at least talked about how white's going to get a lot of support. And so what card is this?
This is Promise of Tomorrow. So this is an enchantment. It costs 2 and 1 white, so 3 mana total. And it reads, whenever a creature you control dies, exile it. At the beginning of each end step, if you control no creatures, sacrifice Promise of Tomorrow and return all cards exiled with it to the battlefield under your control. And I also want to read the flavor text because I do think it is very poignant here. It is Death and Wait.
Oh, this card. Seb McKinnon art.
Oh, it's so good. Seb McKinnon, again, I said this in the previous episode, one of my favorite artists in Magic, if not my favorite. He is so talented. Also makes his own music. I forget his
name. Oh, I didn't know that.
Name. Yeah, I'll look it up for you after the show and I'll get it for you. And we'll try to put it in the show notes as well, because I don't remember exactly what his stage name or whatever you want to call it is. But he makes really cool like ambient like tunes and stuff like that. It's very like ethereal sounding.
Love that.
Super, super cool. So the card though, Promise of Tomorrow, this is a card that I read it and I go, this card's broken. I just don't know why. Like, I don't know exactly how we're going to take advantage of this card or who's going to take advantage of this card. Obviously, Blink is like the first one because those are all ETB creatures. But my lord, this card is so good and so strong. It is a kill on sight card by and large.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the way that I look at it, at least at first one, at first glance, if you will, is it's board wipe protection. And then that's a kind of a floor thing. You know, you play this. Your board is pretty much safe because stuff gets removed. If you know a board wipe happens, whether you do the board wipe or someone else, you get your stuff back. And if anything, it makes your board wipes better, you know, because when you board wipe, you kill all your creatures, you know your stuff's coming back. Now it's just become a better Cyclonic Rift, you know. Yeah, it turns your board wipe into a better Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that, that it basically makes your board wipes asymmetrical. That's actually really, really strong. I didn't even consider that one. Again, like the ETBs are obviously going to be what a lot of people will look to, and this card will be a staple in some decks for sure.
No, I think it's a powerful card. I think it's really cool. You know, this idea of protection in white, making sure that you get their value. I could even see it in Aristocrats deck, you know, where you're sacrificing stuff, and then once you have no more creatures, boom, you bring them all back and you just do it again, you know, because this is gonna, of course, trigger in your end step when you don't have any more creatures.
Yeah, definitely. If you're in some sort of Aristocrat strategy that doesn't have tokens or doesn't heavily rely on tokens, it could definitely be really, really strong.
For sure. I think it's a great card. And I'm going to move on to my next ones, which I think is another cycle. I'm the cycle guy today. I love these cycles here. And that's going to be all of the courts. I love the courts mostly because they introduce a mechanic that I love, which is Monarch. Yes. I think it's super fun. It's super great in Commander. Basically, all of them read that when Court of blah, blah, blah enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch. And then they all have different abilities. The two that I like the best are the Court of Ire, which is the red one. So it's 3 and 2 red. And it reads, at the beginning of your upkeep, Court of Ire deals 2 damage to any target. One, I love that. Any target, creature, player, planeswalker. I love the any target stuff. But then if you are the Monarch, it deals 7 damage to that player or permanent instead. 7's a pretty high one. It's going to kill most things, you know. If not, do a significant amount of damage to your opponent. And so I love that. I think the mechanic of Monarch is great, which if you don't know, the Monarch is when you become the Monarch at your end step, if you are the Monarch, you get to draw an additional card. Now, this also could be taken from you. So if someone attacks you and they deal combat damage to you, then they steal the Monarch. And it kind of just has this... What's the word I'm trying to think of? Where you want to try to get the Monarch, but then it makes you really think about who you're attacking. What are the implications of that, and is it worth it? And then you get value, of course, from staying the Monarch. The second one being Court of Bounty, which I think is the best one. It's the green one,
but by far.
Right. Oh my gosh, green has the best version of the cycle. Who would have guessed? Which of course it gives you Monarch when it comes in. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. Already worth it. But if you're the Monarch, instead, you may put a creature or land card from your hand onto the battlefield. Busted. Crazy. What? Like, I read that and I was like, oh, you get that much value off, like, just a free creature? Okay. I think you're going to see that in a lot of green decks.
Yeah, I do too. I really like this idea that they ran with in this set of rewarding you for being the monarch. You get to be the monarch, and then you also get to, you get paid off for remaining the monarch. So one of the things we always talk about in Commander is free stuff is the best stuff. If you get to put out something for free, whether it's land, whether it's a creature, whether it's a permanent, an artifact, you know, enchantment, all of that, that is the best way to get bang for your buck. And Court of Bounty really lets you do that. So I am so excited to possibly get to play this card. I'm not sure which deck specifically I would put it into, but it definitely would slot into most decks that I would play as a huge avid player.
For sure. Agreed. It's big. And like I said, my favorite thing is they introduced the mechanic. That's why I like the cycle.
Yep.
But clearly the green one is the best one. Speaking of green, you got a powerhouse of a green creature that maybe you could cast for free with the court.
Yeah, so Kadama of the East Tree is a really cool legendary creature that I think that you should absolutely I honestly don't think you should play this as your commander. And what Kadama of the East Tree says is it is a 6 mana legendary creature spirit. It costs 4 and 2 green. It has reach, and it's a 6/6, and it does have partner, which is nice.
Good option.
Whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under your control, if it wasn't put onto the battlefield with this ability, you may put a permanent card with equal or lesser converted mana cost from your hand onto the battlefield. And the reason, first of all, like I was just talking about, free stuff, best stuff. The reason that I think that this card maybe shouldn't be your commander is that it is a very good effect, but I think it is almost, it's almost too narrow. So like if Guardian Project was a creature, you wouldn't want to play that as your commander. So what I think you might want to do with Kodama is, like, I'm going to put Kodama into Kethis. It's a legendary creature. It helps me get something. It helps me get 2-for-1s and everything like that. I think that it'll be a really good utility piece, part of assembling an engine rather than your commander, because I do think you're almost handicapping yourself by not playing as wide a commander, because this card wants you to do things that you're probably going to want to do in other decks. So I think that you play this in, you know, your Uro deck, you play this in your Amaranth Illustrious deck, you play this in your Kethis deck, you play this in your green mid-range deck, any green mid-range deck this card is just good in.
For sure. No, I think it's a powerful effect. Like you said, I think it works better than 99. I think you're going to see it in Command Zone because it's going to be tempting to get all that value in a card that you know you're going to have. But I definitely think it plays better in the 99.
I also just realized that the way this is worded, it's kind of busted. Whenever another permanent enters the battlefield, put another permanent onto the battlefield with this ability, you can literally play a land and then play another land.
Yep, because equal or lesser. Yeah,
it's not cast. That's really good.
Yep, you do get the double land ability as well as any, you know, those other abilities that people are going to take advantage of, and it's going to be fantastic.
So good. And speaking of lands, you have a good land for us to talk about as well.
Yeah, I think aside from the Battle Bond lands being reprinted, this is probably another land that got a lot of people excited, and that's going to be War Room. So War Room is a colorless land that comes in untapped. Love that, by the way. And for 3 and tapping, you can pay life equal to the number of colors in your commander's color identity and draw a card. I finally heard that colorless commanders get good card draw is what I heard from this. But I think it goes in a lot of decks that have struggled traditionally with card draw. So your non-blue decks, I would play this in a mono red deck. You know, pay 3 and a life to draw a card. Yeah, sounds pretty good to me. What do you think of War Room?
Yeah, I think this card immediately goes into every colorless, every mono white, every red, and every Boros deck at the very least. I think by and large, it is so good in those 4 types of decks. It is even pay 3 mana, 2 life, that is to draw a card. That's really good in Boros. You can deal with that. You'll take that all day. So I think that'll be really, really good in those kinds of decks.
For sure. Like we said, giving support to these archetypes and to these color identities that haven't had access to this sort of thing before. I think War Room's good. Plus, I love it because it looks like the board is filled with Settler of Catan pieces. That's just me, but that's
a reason why I love it. I'm with you. I definitely am a big fan of this card. Now, as sad as it is to say this, War Room is not going to be played in some of these Commander decks that we're going to talk about. Yeah. The decks that we are most excited to build with the release of Commander Legends. Okay.
Of course. When we talk about Commander Legends, of course, you know, people are going to be building a bunch of new Commander decks. And so we're going to take this opportunity to talk about the Commanders that we are excited to build personally. So this is going to be more personal, our own opinions, what we're excited about. But I still think that all these choices are really cool. So why don't you tell us your first pick, Taito?
Yeah, so my first pick, this one, I'm already making plans to take apart one of my decks to make this deck. And it is Amareth the Lustrous, right? So Amareth the Lustrous. This is a Bant dragon, costs 3 and green, white, blue. That is Bant. So 6 mana total. Legendary creature dragon, flying 6/6. And it says, whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under your control, look at the top card of your library. If it shares a card type with that permanent, you may reveal that card and put it into your hand. I love the art on this dragon. It looks so sweet. It's beautiful colors. It's the exact color. I had this thing where, depending on the color combinations of my deck, I use certain color sleeves, and Bant for me It's always been like that teal, like light aqua blue.
Oh my gosh, are we the Amareth, same person?
And Amareth is perfect. That's exactly what color they are. So I really like this card. I'm probably going to use it just to build some like Bant mid-range good stuff, which I am a big fan of good stuff decks. That's why I like Ketha so much. It's legendary good stuff.
Yeah, right.
That's my favorite thing. So I'm definitely looking forward. I'm going to take apart my Uro deck, but Uro will go in there. Uro's a fantastic card. So I'm excited to build that deck. That's my number one choice for this set for sure.
Sweet. I think that's fine. I think it's going to be a popular one, like you said. But I think I look forward to seeing your build and hopefully playing against it sometime on stream or off. My first pick is going to be Arkalos Lagoon Mystic, otherwise known as Oogway from Kung Fu Panda. he's so cool, and we could talk all day about, you know, he should have been banned or whatever. He's Soul Tie, though. And so for me, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is, let me read him. He's 1 and Soul Tie colors, Legendary Turtle Shaman, a 2/4. And he says, as long as Arkalos Lagoon Mystic is tapped, other permanents enter the battlefield tapped. So if he's tapped, everything else is coming in tapped. And as long as Arkalos is untapped, other permanents enter the battlefield untapped. And this flavor text is literally, life is not a race. You know, it is just...
Which is funny, because we also have the hare in this set, which we won't take too much time talking about, but we do get the tortoise and the hare, which I think is really, really cool.
Very, very flavorful, yes. I'm building this. There's a few ways to build it. I think the first that comes to mind, of course, is stacks, you know, stasis, winter orb, stuff like that. To me, that's not very fun, and turtle tribal's just a little underpowered for me. So what
there are other turtles?
There are other turtles, yeah. There's quite a few. There's giant tortoise, there's Aegis. Turtle, they're not very good, but they are there. I guess you could even do like a turtle, like big butts, kind of deck where you like do, what's that? The one that where they deal combat damage equal to their toughness. You could do stuff like that. Yeah. You know, that's something. I'm going to build this as Soul Tie, oops, all combo, if you will. It's just going to be a lot of combos in there. It's going to be a pseudo landfall deck because of that untap ability. So lands that usually come untapped. I mean, think about this. It turns all those really bad tap lands into literal dual lands. You know, if he's untapped. Those ones that give you a life are even better than dual lands. Yeah, right. They're better than OG duels, which I think is hilarious. And so, of course, I'm going to try to find ways to tap him down during my opponent's turn. So I'm looking at vehicles. I'm looking at different enchantments and artifacts that I can use to tap him. And then he's going to untap on my upkeep, which is great. You could go the political way also, where you're like, oh, well, I'll untap him for some people, but I'll, you know, tap him for some that, you know, they're getting too far ahead. And so I want to slow down some people. I'll make an ally with one person. But basically, I'm just going to Soul Tie out a bunch of stuff. And there's a few combos. There's one where there's a creature where, and I should have put up the creature. But when you pay one and you sacrifice a creature and you go get a basic land, it enters the battlefield tapped. But of course, with Arkalos, it'll enter untapped. And then if you have like a rampaging Baloth or something else that creates tokens on landfall, you can just draw all your basics and play them at once, which I think is really funny because they come in untapped. You pay one, sacrifice the creature, and you just do that a bunch. You get a bunch of, you know, all your basics. So I think that's kind of hilarious. And that's kind of where I'm going to take him, is just combo out, get all my basics there, and probably Thassa's Oracle in the end.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I definitely think that this card will be really cool. And that was the first thing I thought of, too, is like getting lands into play not tapped and possibly taking advantage of that. So I'm excited to see Arkalos for sure. I think he's a really cool commander. I also love his art, just like you said, like Master Uwe kind of style.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Now, I did say earlier, I think in the previous episode, that I've never built partners before.
Here we go.
These are the partners that I was considering possibly building. And as I've stated before on this podcast, I am a huge fan of elves. And they handed us some elf partner decks, partner commanders, I should say. So they gave us Galanra, Caller of Wirewood, and Miara, Thorn of the Glade. They are both uncommons. Galanra is a 3-mana, 2-1 green elf druid that says, tap it, add green. When you spend this mana to cast a spell with converted mana cost 6 or greater, draw a card and partner. And it's an elf druid. And then we also have Miara, Thorn of the Glade, who I absolutely love the art for. I think she is so pretty, and the art is so pretty, and I love that she has red hair just like me. And she costs 1 and a black, and she's a legendary creature elf scout. Whenever she or another elf you control dies, you may pay 1 and 1 life if you do draw a card. I think this could be a really cool green-black kind of deck to build where you do green-black elves, because black elves have kind of been left out of the conversation in Commander, because for the longest time, our best elf commanders have been like Freylis, Ezeri, Marwyn, Reese the Redeemed. None of those have black.
Right.
So I do think it's really cool for Miara to be able to bring in that color. And I want to be able to make like Abzan elves. That would be really cool as an Abzan. And you can if you just use a different commander, but I want to have like a full Abzan commander for elves or partners. So it is slightly unfortunate. The only Abzan commander for elves that isn't elf is actually Kethys.
Just play Morphon, really like you said in our last episode.
That is true. I could also play Giant Morophon Boy for this. So I don't know. I'm just excited for these. I think they're really cool cards. I like their art, and it is nice to see that elves that are black, which even though green is my preferred color, Shaman of the Pack is my favorite card in Modern. That's the deck I play is Coco Elves. So
yeah.
I am excited for Miara at the very least to join the party.
For sure. No, very cool cards. Speaking of stuff that we haven't really built, I've never built a Voltron commander, and I think this next one might be my first. This is Jared Carthalion, True Heir. I love his little lore, the idea of he's a lost king, and now he's back to take his throne. And so he is going to be Naya color, so red, green, white, a human warrior. And it says, when Jared Carthalion enters the battlefield, target opponent becomes the monarch. So you make someone else the monarch. You cannot become the monarch this turn. And then he says, if damage would be dealt to him, while you're the monarch, prevent that damage and put that many 1/1 counters on it. So that's really cool, because if you're the monarch, now when he's taking damage, he's actually getting bigger and stronger, and he's kind of feeding off that, I am the heir. And in fact, his whole flavor text reads, I'm here for what's mine. And I just kind of love that idea of taking his thing. Now, I'm also going to build this as a flavorful theme deck. And I know you disagree with it because he is not a ranger.
But I don't disagree.
Right. I agree that he's not a ranger, and that would make it like just flavor win. But he reminded me for some reason of Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, this idea of this unknown king who comes back to, and claims this throne and whatnot. And so for me, I actually love the green, red, and white colors, because there's so many Lord of the Rings style cards. You got dwarves for red. I'm thinking I'm going to put Torbrin in. I got my Gimli, green for elves. Got to get my Legolas. White, oh my gosh, this is the best part. Kithskin. I get to put freaking hobbits in this deck, so I'm just gonna cram a bunch of the fellowship into this. And I'm even thinking of doing a pseudo party mechanic, because so he's got, of course we have our warrior here, again, should be a ranger, but he, you know, we'll talk about maybe when D&D comes off that maybe that hopefully becomes a supported thing. But, you know, if I can get a wizard, Gandalf, right? Some sort of red or white wizard, maybe Gandalf the white wizard. Okay. You feeling me? We get ourselves a rogue. We've got some green rogues recently, our Legolas maybe. And what's the other one for the party? We get warrior.
Cleric.
So yeah, white, a cleric, some sort of healer, something like that.
No, you can definitely
a Chithkin cleric. You could actually get a party sub theme in there as well, which is literally Lord of the Rings is getting a D&D party together and going on a Tolkien adventure.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I did give you a hard time for it on stream, and I will say that is true, but only from a place of love, because I feel like I find that I always want to build that kind of Vorthos-y deck, and I always find myself like being super nitpicky about
Sure.
No, like this doesn't work. It's not perfect. Right. But that's obviously a personal thing. So
sure. I'm going to blur some lines really cool. and kind of just forget that he's a warrior and just go from there. But yeah, that's a commander that I'm excited from a lore perspective, a Vorthos fanfic kind of perspective.
Yeah, no, sure. And honestly, on the flip side of that, I also have a lore creature that I'm excited for to build as a commander. My last choice is actually a magic lore character that I'm so excited finally got printed. For anyone that knows me, elves are my favorite creature type. That is 100% true. My favorite cards in the history of magic are elves. Llanowar elves and Elvish Mystic, and now Bindhorn elves is in this set.
Yes.
However, my second favorite creature type is angels, and we finally got the last angel sister. We got Lisa. I'm gonna say Lisa because I think it sounds cooler. Shroud of Dusk. She is 2WW, so Orzhov, and she is 5 mana. Legendary creature angel. She's a 5/5 flying lifelink. And what Liesa says, basically, I'll read the full thing. Rather than pay 2 generic for each previous time you've cast a spell from the command zone this game, pay 2 life that many times. Basically, your commander tax is now your life. You do not, and look, I cannot stress this up, you cannot pay commander tax with mana.
Yep.
You have to pay it with equal life that you would have been paying with that mana. And then she also says flying life, like whenever a player casts a spell, they lose 2 life. I think this spell is super cool to build in like a life gain, like drain them while you're also going up kind of idea. Mm-hmm. So like Combal, Consul of Allocution will go into that deck. I definitely just think that it's an interesting kind of build, and I'm just so happy that she finally got printed after all these years.
Yeah, no, I think it's a cool card, a 5/5 for 5 with lifelink flying. It's a, you know, solid angel, you know, it swings in, it's going to get you some of that life so that you can pay some more later. And then, yeah, that just that little whenever a player casts a spell, they lose 2 life. We've seen a lot where it's, you know, they have to cast a non-creature spell or they cast this certain kind of spell. Just casting any spell, I think that's really cool. It makes your storm player really, really mad, which is great. And I think it's a really, really fun card. And I do like that she is Orzhov colors. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I definitely I like Orzhov. It's probably one of my favorite non-black 2-color combinations. So I am very excited.
Wait, did you say non-black? I think you mean non-green, my friend.
Non-green. I do mean non-green. I apologize.
Well,
so I am excited to possibly build her or at least to slot her into some other decks.
For sure. I think she goes in a lot of decks. Anything that has angels, tribal, if you're doing white and black angels, or just it's just an overall good card, but works really well as a commander. Something that I think is not a very good commander, but I'm going to try to work so hard because he's hilarious. His name is Blim, Comedic Genius. And if you can tell anything about me, it's that I just like weird stuff, man. And Blim is weird, and that's why I was so drawn to him. First of all, his name is Blim. Love it.
Blim is an imp, and he's weird.
Right, yeah.
Or he's a devil?
Yeah, he's an imp. He is an imp. He's a legendary imp for 2 and Rakdos. Flying. Whenever Blim, Comedic Genius, deals combat damage to a player, that player gains control of target permanent you control. Then each player loses life and discards cards equal to the number of permanents they control but don't own. It's weird, man. It's an effect that I've never really seen. I mean, we've seen this give other stuff to other people, you know, this bad gift kind of giving stuff. And I think Blim is just kind of funny. You know, he's a 4/3. You know, hopefully he's got to get in for damage. So that's one thing you got to be mindful of. He does have flying, which is good, but I would still pack some Rogue's Passage stuff like that to kind of get him in there. Maybe some protection spells. But what I'm thinking about building for him is kind of enchantments and stuff like that. So I'm thinking enchantments that are bad. So like Deadweight and stuff like that, putting on their big creatures that technically you still control it, even though it's on their stuff. But then you just give them control and nothing really changes when you hit them. You know what I mean? They keep that. It's just like they just now own the Deadweight on their creature. And cool. What are they still have to use a removal spell to get rid of it or these bad enchantments. The other stuff that you want to look at giving are like the enchantments that say things like you lose the game if...
like Liliana's Contract, right? Like that's one of the ones. It's like if you've done that.
Yep. There's a Lich one too. It's Lich's... I'm pulling it up here in just a second. But it says... if you rather than, oh, I have to pull it up. Give me 1 second. Lich's Mastery. It's 3BBB. It's hexproof. You can't lose the game. Whenever you gain life, draw that many cards. And whenever you lose life, for each one life you lost, exile a permanent you control or a card from your hand or graveyard. So whenever you lose life, you're going to lose life when you get this, right? Because you give this to the opponent, they're going to at least lose one life. So they're going to have to exile a permanent they control or a card from their hand or graveyard. Now, if they don't have a lot of stuff in their graveyard, this can hurt them pretty bad. If they have a graveyard, you know, they have a little bit more to there. But then it says when it leaves the battlefield, you lose the game. So all you have to do is figure out a way to get rid of, you know, the enchantments and they lose the game. You know, there's just these kind of idea of taking bad enchantments and giving them to them or even curses, you know, where I place the curse on them. Technically, I still own the curse. But then when Blim hits it, I'm like, okay, now you own the curse. Nothing's changed and you're still cursed. And now you're taking damage from Blim. And so he's just kind of meme-y. I'm just known to be kind of a jerk in my play group. So it's definitely something that as soon as it was previewed, all my friends were like, Jacob's going to build this and we're going to hate him because he's going to find some way to make it really, really gross.
Yeah, I think it's a really funny card. I have a friend in my play group that's all about like kind of stealing things and like wacky commanders and stuff like that. So I feel that, and I'm both excited and terrified for him to build that commander. So shout outs to Steve. Can't wait to see it.
Right. What I also like is the idea of using red steel effects for the turn. And then once you give it to someone else, they just control it because it gets rid of that. You control it to the end of turn. So if I active treason someone else's stuff and then go hit someone and give it to someone else, like that's just hilarious to me because it's like I take your... Oh, what was that big green card that cascades 5 times? You know, I go steal that.
Apex Devastator.
Yeah, I go steal that and go give it to someone else. Like, that's just funny to me, you know? I think Blim Community Genius is cool. I love it when they come up with cards with just funky kind of mechanics and stuff. And that's something that's probably that's the last one that's kind of on my list of I'm going to build this when the set drops.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about our commanders that we want to build, we've talked about all these cards that we think we're going to use and we're going to see so much. Jake, what are your overall thoughts on Commander Legends?
Oh, man. I don't mean to sound like a shill or nothing, but kind of a slam dunk. Like, I think it's good. I think it's solid. You know, just a solid set for Commander. I think they hit on a lot of stuff that Commander players wanted. If I could mention anything, I wish there was some more support for White. I think White got some good cards. Not to the extent of what we wish, but then also Commander Legends was created kind of before the conversation of White's weak in Commander. I mean, I know it's kind of been an ongoing thing, but it's been really, really in the public mind recently, you know, which is too recent for them to really have done anything with this set. You know, the set was probably designed 2 years ago. So with that in mind, I
think they said it's been in development for 5 years, and we're probably not going to see the effects of the discussion of White needing more in Commander until probably about, if I had to guess, Somerset of 2021. That's when we're really going to start to see
it. Yeah, because I think they can squeeze some stuff in, and we'll definitely see some of that. But that aside, I think this set's good. Partners, cool. Again, they're not like my favorite thing in the world. I know there's been some backlash of, well, not just too easy to partner stuff and Commander should be what, you know, it's all about one commander. It's not commanders, but get over it. You know, this is a fun social format, like have fun, allow your friends to have fun. It kind of goes in hand. I want to specify that have fun, let other people have fun too. And I think this is a fun set. I wish it did not come out during COVID because I really think the draft experience is fun. I've heard from like, you know, the people who have got to play tested that it's great. If you can just do a sealed pool with your significant other or your friend where you buy a box, you each open 6 packs and, you know, create a deck. I think that's going to give you a really fun thing. I like sealed, you know, draft and stuff because it feels like you get a game inside a game. You know, you get all these cards that you're going to go and play in your commander decks normally, but you kind of get a mini game before that. You know, you get like extra bang for your buck, if you will.
Yeah. So scale 1 to 10. What would you rate it?
So 1 being like the best or like 10 being the best?
1 being the worst.
1 being the worst.
10 being like perfect.
I would say like a solid 8, maybe an 8.5 to 9. I'm thinking some of my favorite sets have been mystery boosters, and that's because, you know, great reprints. I'm thinking of stuff like that. Modern Horizons, great commander support, even though it necessarily wasn't meant for this. This is made for commander, if you will. I think they missed the mark on a few things, like pirates not being Grixis, like not adding an Abzan stuff, you know, elf, not adding a Bant Merfolk. So I think they missed, but it's like, how much can you feasibly fit into a set that's already jam-packed with a lot of stuff? I think they added stuff that we wanted, that we asked for, that we need, while not sacrificing, you know, the integrity of Magic, if you will. Black Lotus did not ruin any, or sorry, Gilded Lotus did not, not Guild, yeah, Jeweled Lotus. Lotus. So many freaking Lotuses. Jeweled Lotus did not ruin anything. I would say it's a solid 8.
Okay.
What are your thoughts, though? I'm curious to hear what you think.
So I agree with most of what you said. I think that what is in the set is sweet. I think a lot of it is really good. Partner, again, just like you said, I'm not a huge fan of, more because I really like commanders that dictate your deck. I like commanders that say, this is the strategy that you're going to go. Whether it's, you know, always one strategy or if there's a multitude of strategies. I really like that aspect of different commanders. So I'm not a huge fan of the partners. I wish that they hadn't wasted, I don't want to say wasted, because they're not wasted. I wish they hadn't devoted so many slots to the partners, but I think they are a necessary step they had to take because we're gonna fight about this, but I wish Commander Legends had not been a draft set.
Sure.
I really think that for Commander, the set, I think the idea of drafted Commander is fantastic. I do want to put that out there. However, for the first one, I really wish it had been devoted specifically to making our format better.
You know what? I agree. And I don't actually fight you on that point. Please, I'm sorry.
That's awesome. So I think that held back the set in a couple ways. One, how many partners there are. Two, the reprints that are in the set. This would have been a really good time to reprint a lot of cards. Teferi's Protection should have been in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Cyclonic Rift should have been in the set.
Yeah.
Greater Hoof Behemoth should have been in the set. Even if it was just like one iconic monocolored spell from each, I said Cyclonic Rift, Teferi's Protection,
Crater Hoof
Behemoth. Granted, they did Vampiric Tutor. Yeah,
Gamble.
Gamble. I will probably want something that's like expensive, right?
So
Sneak Attack.
Yeah. Well, Sneak Attack just got reprinted in Double Masters.
That's true. It did. I forget that set happened.
Yeah. Rex's been getting some stuff. I agree,
but you understand my point.
I do. I think when you hear Commander Legends, I think like the best of Commander. It's almost like a Commander anthology is what I originally thought.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool they brought in a lot of new cards. I wouldn't have hated it if it was more like mystery boosters and it was pretty much just reprints, you know, for stuff that we want for Commander, and then maybe go into the next set is, you know, Commander Legends Draft Experience 2000, of course, a better name than that. But I think you're right. The partner making, you know, the partner's totally necessary for draft. I think that if you are going to make a commander draft set, having partners is important. But you're right. It did hinder the ability, you know, the slots to reprint stuff that we want to see in Commander.
Yeah. And I think that ends up being my main negative for the set is the fact that it is hindered because of the fact that it is a draft set. And again, I am biased in that because I am not a draft player. So there are a lot of sets that have come out and I'm like, wow, I kind of just wish that wasn't a draft set. But at the same time, I understand why it is a draft set. I understand why there are draft sets in general. So I don't bash it too hard for that. The cards that are printed in the set, fantastic. Personally, I had a lot of trouble picking out commanders that I would like. And even the ones I did pick out, it was like, Amaranth is just a good stuff commander.
Yeah.
Like I could build that deck right now with any Bant command. I could build it with Chulainn, right?
Yeah.
It's just like it's nothing that no commander ended up really exciting me personally. But again, I don't want to knock the set too hard for that. Long and short of it, I do think that I give this set like a solid 7.5, 8 at the highest. the draft thing, the fact that the set is so hindered from being great because of the draft aspect of it, it really does. It leaves just like the tiniest bit of a bad taste in my mouth. However, I'm still going to buy 2 boxes of the set. I'm still going to buy a ton of cards in the set.
For sure. I think it's one of those where, and we see this with sets with identity crises, if you will. It's like, okay, is this going to be reprint the stuff that we want, or is it going to be new stuff for Commander? And it had a little bit of both, you know? It finished the cycles of the Battle Bond lands. You know, it added some more. It reprinted the partners, which I think was a big deal. I think reprinting the partners was really good. New partners, not so good. But reprinting the original partners.
The thing with those though is I don't and I could be wrong, those aren't in the main set. All of those reprints, the promos and such, those aren't in the main set with like the etched foil and everything like that. All of like the Moldrotha, the Caradors, all the partners, the Zedru, what else? Ramos,
Thrasios,
Maelstrom Wanderer, Queen Marchesa, Yuriko, Xenagos, Rosh, Nekuzar, all these classic commanders, those aren't in the main set. I don't know necessarily where you get them. I don't know if
they're the like collectors, aren't they?
Slot. They must be, yeah. So they must be being treated almost as if like they're like the constellations or like the, you know, like the expeditions. I think that's what they are, is they're expeditions for the set.
Yeah.
Which it's not bad because when you do pull one, you get that nice one. However, I'm nervous for how low the price is going to go down. Thrasios and Timnar, $40 cards. Right. Xenagos is up there. Queen Marchesa is up there. These are expensive cards, and they need to be reprinted. I'm going to be getting Eureka, way. Right? I'm going to be getting that Eureka. Yes, yeah. Exactly. I'm going to get these cards, but it's just like, I don't know. There's it like just misses the mark in a couple ways, and I do think that's why I have to give it a 7.5 or an 8.
Sure. And, you know, knowing that, I didn't actually know that. That kind of brings me down a little bit. The little etched foil stuff, I'm not a big fan of them. I like the full art, or the, should I say, the border extended a lot more. This etched foil thing, it's so funny. Me and Livy were talking, we were reading like this Reddit thing that was like, it's the year 25, and there are hourly bans in Magic. I bring out my hover foil, you know, modern deck that cost me, you know, blah blah blah. And so it's funny because we talk about these hover foils and this idea, and then it's like we literally get like, you know, these almost 3D foils. It's kind of funny the way that we're going to bling. But that's another section. You know, it's another. I think it's a whole episode right there is talking about blinging decks and card frames and stuff. But you're right. Yeah. That does bring me down, and I still kind of stand by what I said. I think it's a solid 8. I think. Again, it's worth picking up some boxes of playing it with some friends if you can. Again, even if you can just get 4 friends and draft and maybe throw an extra booster, you know, like I said, instead of drafting 3, draft 4 boosters, I think you should go for it because I think that's the way it's meant to be played. And so you should experience that.
Yeah. And again, that's why it is hard for me to rank sets sometimes or like give them a grade, is because I technically don't experience them in the way that they are intended to be experienced in a lot of ways. But I do feel confident that this set could have been something else. And maybe that's my problem, is I wanted it to be something else. However, I'm still overall generally pleased with the set.
For sure. I think it's going to be a good set. I think people are going to enjoy it. And I think it's going to lead to some other follow-up to Commander Legends 2 or Commander or something.
Well, we're seeing Modern Horizons 2 in 2021. Exactly. So that already goes to show you that's probably what's going to happen in this vein as well.
Agreed. Well, man, this has been so much fun talking about this. I think this was like probably the perfect set for
us. Just under 2 hours too.
Right. Yeah. So I think we were pretty concise. We touched a lot of the big topics, and definitely as two avid Commander players, this is just perfect for us.
Yes. I was so excited to talk about this set. Love this podcast. Love doing it so much. It's always like the best part of my week.
Agreed. And we record on Monday. So, you know what? After a hard Monday, I could definitely use a light night of Magic. So thank you.
And we have to date this recording, we have Wednesday off here, at least in Massachusetts. I'm sure you might too for Veterans Day.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sweet. So I'm excited for that.
Perfect, man. Well, in case people want to follow us, if they want to figure out where we are so they can get updates on our new episodes, when we're releasing, when we're doing stuff like that, tell them where they can find us on our socials.
Yeah, so they can find us on Twitter. You can find us at MTG Ed Network. On YouTube, you can find us at MTG Educators Network. And on Spotify, you can find us at MTG Educators Network Podcast. Just look for the purple hat And you'll find us. And as for me, you can find me at Title Parliament on Twitter and Twitch.
Yeah. And then for me, you can find me on Instagram. And yeah, pretty much Instagram and Twitch at casual_Jake_, as well as you can find me on Twitter at Jake Casual. Unfortunately, Casual Jake was already taken, so that's what we got. But you can find me at Jake Casual on Twitter. And make sure when you do go and follow the Ed Network that you also join the Discord server if you are an educator. If you want to find a group of like-minded people to discuss education, to discuss magic, that Discord server is for you. And that's where we get our pool of guests that we're going to start bringing on are the educators from that network. So make sure you check out the Discord as well.
Yeah, we're really excited to start talking to a lot of our other educators about both magic, but we've been lacking on the education side for sure. So we're going to be bringing in some really smart people, some really cool folks to talk to about the education side. And I'm really excited for that. But I've been Taito.
And I have been Casual Jake.
And this has been the MTG Educators Network podcast.
Thank you for watching and listening. And remember, teachers make magic.